And time for Gaza Corner. It's no secret, not breaking any kind of big news to tell you that big money and corruption go hand in hand. And when you're dealing with the most lucrative sporting event in the world, I'm talking about the World Cup, which is in full swing earlier this morning, our time, the U.S. lost to the Netherlands, by the way, 3-1. And the World Cup will crown the champion on December the 18th. It's watched by some 5 billion, with a B, 5 billion people. That's a lot of eyeballs. And there is no greater prize for countries that have despicable human rights records than to deodorize its image through greenwashing, which is why Egypt hosted the recently concluded UN climate change conference and why Qatar, not even the size of Connecticut, did everything possible to bribe its way and surveil, spy its way, apparently hiring a firm led by a former CIA agent to spy on FIFA to become the host of the 2022 World Cup, which was awarded back in December of 2010. And Qatar is the first country in the Middle East to host the World Cup. Corruption and cozying up to dictatorial regimes is nothing new to FIFA. FIFA is soccer's, or the rest of the world, most of the rest of the world, you know, says football, but we'll go with soccer. Soccer's governing body is FIFA. Previous World Cups have been held in Mussolini's Italy back in 1934, in Argentina during the military dictatorship of Jorge Rafael Videla in 1978. The 2018 World Cup was hosted by Russia, and bribes played a key role in awarding Russia as the host country. FIFA makes a mockery of being a nonprofit as it operates a billion-dollar business, multi-billions, when it's World Cup time. A quirk of Swiss law allows FIFA to qualify as a nonprofit organization. And by the way, I'm saying Qatar. A lot of people say Qatar. There's an article that the New York Times did, a big article about how to pronounce it. It's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the Tangents playlist at tangents.com. But basically, the article says, say it however you want. It's okay. And most people apparently say Qatar. So that's what I'll go with. Qatar is one of the wealthiest countries in the world due to being the world's largest exporter of liquid natural gas. Its citizens' annual per capita income is more than $120,000. Retirees are entitled to a minimum pension of $4,000 per month. Education and health care are free at every level. And before you start thinking about maybe relocating to Qatar to obtain Qatari citizenship, you either have to have a Qatari father or have lived in the country continuously for 20 years. The LGBTQI community is not welcome. Homosexuals and all forms of extramarital sex are subject to arrest and imprisonment for 7 years. Political parties are banned. Trade unions don't even exist. There is no independent media. Qatar ranks 119th out of 180 on the Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index. Estimates vary, but apparently Qatar spent between $250 and $300 billion on infrastructure on the backs of hundreds of thousands of migrant workers. It had virtually none of the infrastructure. Not only stadiums, rail, hotels, highways, anything you may think of that they may have had, they didn't. A new airport was built as well. And also, for the World Cup, they actually built an entire new city called Lusail, which cost $45 billion to build. But no price was too high because they're taking a page out of Saudi Arabia, which has proven with sponsoring a number of high-profile sports events, including their own golf tour series, which attracts the world's best golfers from the PGA because they're offering so much money. Global prestige can be bought by getting into sports. Qatar is probably correctly betting that the stench from its human rights abuses and corruption will dissipate over time, and the world will remember that Qatar had 5 billion eyes. Actually, it's 10 billion, isn't it? Because everyone has two eyes, on hosting the World Cup, which provides a veneer of legitimacy. Awarding the North Pole as a future location for the World Cup is no more absurd than choosing Qatar. The World Cup usually takes place in June and July, which follows the completion of the most of the professional leagues in Europe. But that got turned on its head in Qatar. Summer temperatures routinely reach 120 degrees Fahrenheit. So this year's tournament was moved to November and December as teams had little time to practice as their seasons were halted in mid-season so they could join the World Cup. New Yorker journalist Heidi Blake, during the New Yorker Radio Hour, which is Mondays, 1 o'clock, a really excellent show, and it will be moving to 4 o'clock starting in January on KALW. But this is what Heidi Blake had to say during this podcast.
Qatar is a tiny country. There are 1.5 million football fans who descend on a country hosting the World Cup. So if you imagine trying to cram another 1.5 million people into a country of 2.9 million, I mean, it sort of just doesn't make sense. Qatar had no existing infrastructure in place for a tournament on this scale. The city in which the World Cup was scheduled to be hosted, Lusail, did not exist at the point at which Qatar was awarded the rights. They had to build a city. They had to build 7 air-conditioned stadiums in the desert.
And that was laughing in the background at David Remnick, who's the moderator of the New Yorker Radio Hour. Qatar built what I can call disposable stadiums because it plans to actually tear down 5 of them after the World Cup. And they're also disposable in terms of human life. This is Heidi Blake again from the very same podcast from the New Yorker Radio Hour.
It's about migrant workers who've died building stadiums in the desert. And it's about LGBTQ fans who are going to go to the World Cup and feel unsafe because they've been told not to make public displays of affection because homosexuality is a crime in Qatar. It's a place where journalists have been detained for trying to report on the abuse of migrant workers and on World Cup corruption. But nonetheless, the tournament is happening, and Qatar got its way.
Qatar definitely got its way. I should mention that Heidi is an expert on FIFA corruption. She wrote a book called The Ugly Game. She co-authored it with Jonathan Calvert. It describes how Qatar came to host the World Cup. And the podcast is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. It's about 19 minutes. It's a really, really good listen. When Qatar got awarded the 2022 World Cup 10 years ago, it really brought on a new era of scrutiny of corruption within FIFA because the choice made absolutely no sense. But clearly, if you grease enough palms, you can get your way. 17 of the 22 FIFA executive committee members who were in place at the time Qatar was awarded the cup have now been arrested or indicted, or charged or accused of corruption and bribery. 2 external investigations took place. In Switzerland, Swiss prosecutors looked specifically at money laundering tied into the decisions to award the not just the 2022 Cup to Qatar, but also the selection of Russia in 2018. And to do a deep dive on that, there's a link at the Gaza Corner section It's called Project Merciless, How Qatar Spied on the World of Football in Switzerland. The other much broader investigation was by the United States Justice Department. Former U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch had this to say back in May of 2015.
The 47-count indictment against these individuals includes charges of racketeering, wire fraud, and money laundering conspiracies spanning two decades.
So those were the charges. Michael Driscoll, assistant director in charge of the FBI's New York field office, said, quote, there was an extraordinary amount of money flowing between corrupt officials and businesses in this massive scheme, unquote. The Department of Justice's investigation also made a point of going beyond the Qatar vote to look at corruption going back decades. And 27 people and four corporations have pleaded guilty to various bribery and money laundering charges. Many of the investigations are still underway, and a trial is scheduled to begin in federal court in January, just next month. I actually wonder if the prosecution has the same zeal that it's had up till now, because the U.S. has kind of a conflict of interest, because the U.S. has been awarded the 2026 World Cup. Despite years of investigations and arrests, FIFA's system, which is intrinsically corrupt, appears to invite bribery. And I think it's fair to say Qatar went all out in terms of bribery and spying on FIFA officials because the corrupt system enabled it. The system was already entrenched, and Qatar played along, but did so on such a massive scale, combined with the fact that having the World Cup in the middle of a desert where there's absolutely no infrastructure built doesn't make much sense. But when it got chosen, and that was again in December of 2010, all of a sudden there was all this scrutiny and the SHIT hit the fan. Tariq Panja, who's been covering the World Cup for the New York Times, and his article is linked as well, Why This World Cup is Dogged by Corruption Allegation, said, quote, Qatar just played the game everyone else was going to. They just had more means to do it. Whoever was going to win was never going to win this cleanly. There was perhaps no way to win this cleanly. But there was a huge human cost for this blatantly corrupt process. And as I say, Qatar had to build everything from scratch, stadiums, metros, highways, hotels, in the middle of the desert. And this led to what Minky Warden of Human Rights Watch, she calls, quote, the deadliest major sporting event possibly ever in history, describing this 2022 World Cup. In February of last year, 2021, The Guardian UK broke horrifying news with the headline, quote, revealed 6,500 migrant workers have died in Qatar since World Cup awarded. And that also is linked at the Gaza Corner section. Quoting from the article, more than 6,500 migrant workers from India, Pakistan, Nepal, Bangladesh, and Sri Lanka have died in Qatar since it won the right to host the World Cup. The total death toll is significantly higher, as these figures do not include deaths from a number of countries which send large numbers of workers to Qatar, including the Philippines and Kenya. Deaths that occurred in the final months of 2020 are also not included. Behind the death toll are stories of devastating families, devastated families. And again, this is Mindy Warden of Human Rights Watch, and she goes into greater detail.
Some of the saddest cases that Human Rights Watch has seen are families where the main breadwinner, a young man, went to Qatar, took out a loan to work there, worked in debt bondage, was cheated of wages, did not receive the wages he was promised, and then his body returned home to his family in a coffin.
That is Mindy Warden of Human Rights Watch. excerpted from a Democracy Now! Segment that was not too long ago. It should be noted, Qatar abolished slavery only in 1952, and the Qataris did not investigate the majority of the deaths. They actually attributed them to quote-unquote natural deaths or quote-unquote unexplained deaths. For example, among Indians alone, 80% were under the category natural death. The Guardian reported that these classifications, usually made without an autopsy, often fail to provide any kind of legitimate medical explanation. Remember, we're talking about 120-degree heat and hard labor, and that was likely a significant factor in many worker deaths. Research commissioned by the UN's International Labor Organization supported this, as it reported that for at least 4 months of the year, migrant workers faced significant heat stress when working outside. Also, suicide accounted for 7% of the deaths among Indians, Nepalis, and Bangladeshis. Barak Alamad, a Kuwaiti public health researcher at Harvard, said that the heat exposure almost never turns up in official statistics in Qatar. The Qatari government took no responsibility for the migrant deaths. This is a quote from a government spokesperson. "The mortality rate among these communities is within the expected range for the size and demographics of the population." And FIFA also took no blame. Quote, "With the very stringent health and safety measures on site, the frequency of accidents in FIFA World Cup construction sites has been low when compared to other major construction projects around the world." This is what FIFA said without providing evidence. The head of FIFA, Gianni Infantino, said FIFA would establish a legacy fund after the World Cup to compensate workers and their families who faced abuse and death while building the World Cup. Again, Mindy Warden of Human Rights Watch, she's not buying it.
There's no indication right now that that legacy fund will actually go to the thousands, to the families of thousands of migrant workers who lost their lives to deliver this World Cup.
Steve Coburn, who is Amnesty International's head of economic and social justice, was more optimistic than Mindy was. He said, quote, "If there is one tiny glimmer of hope, it is that Infantino announced that FIFA would establish a legacy fund after the World Cup. This cannot be mere window dressing, however. If FIFA is to salvage anything from this tournament, it must announce that it will invest a significant part of the $6 billion the organization will make from the tournament and make sure this fund is used to compensate workers and their families directly." Qatar itself has rejected creating a remedy fund for harmed migrant workers. Human Rights Watch reports that Qatar has made some notable reforms that, quote, "came late, were narrow in scope, or were weakly enforced," which meant many workers who helped build the World Cup infrastructure fell through the cracks, unquote. Qatar also did not pledge to compensate for future labor rights violations. Until FIFA's system is cleansed and overhauled, FIFA will continue to be the darkest stain on one of the world's most beautiful sports.